Hello, everyone. It's so good to be with you again. My name is Tim Corden, and I am a member of this congregation and proud to be. It's been a while since I went to work at FUS as social justice coordinator. I haven't been around much, but I still like to stay connected with the justice leadership team. And it's so good to be with you. It's this congregation that really has clarified and strengthened my commitment to justice, and I owe so much to it. It's within this congregation that Sustainable Saturday Nights led to us hosting many groups that really raised my awareness about the climate crisis and about the tar sand situation, which is what line three is all about. The tar sands oil in the which rests underneath the boreal forest in Canada creates a lot of destruction when we tear up that forest and transport that oil around the world. It creates harm for Indigenous cultures. It creates a lot of contamination and pollution, and it shortens the fuse on the time bomb, which is the climate crisis. Co-founder of 350, or founder, I should say, of 350.org, Bill McKibben says that if we burn up the tar sands oil, it is game over for the climate, and there'll be little chance of passing on a livable planet to the next generations. Now, in the fall of 2016, Reverend Karen and three congregants, including myself, answered the call of the Standing Rock Sioux elders, calling for a day of prayer and calling on faith communities around the nation to join them on December 4th, 2016. We went out there, had an amazing day of helping at the camp, being in ceremony, praying, and we were in a big circle, like thousands of people holding hands in a big circle around the camp, when the word broke out that the Obama administration had stopped ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to stop the line, or the DAPL pipeline, or the Dakota Access Pipeline. That was an amazing experience, but unfortunately, a month and a half later, we had a new president who quickly rescinded Obama's order. Fortunately, the struggle has not stopped, and Indigenous-led communities around the nation are standing up to the extraction industry. And we have a chance here in the Midwest, both with lines three and lines five, both which touch Wisconsin, and both which are operated and owned by Enbridge, to stop the dangers of these pipelines. Now, just as Obama and Trump have weighed in and started or stopped pipeline projects, so can President Biden. President Biden did in fact stop the Keystone XL pipeline on his first day of office. And though he claims to be a supportive of Indigenous rights and sovereignty, though he claims to be wanting to be a climate president, a president who informs his climate decisions on science, he has not done enough to stop line three. He's done nothing. In fact, his Justice Department approved the Trump era approval of line three. Now, line three is the Enbridge company is pushing forward at a rapid pace, trying to finish this before the permits might get revoked. They hope to be done laying pipe by the end of this month, and it's not too late. We need to pressure Biden to do the right thing. He needs to have the vision and the strength to stand up to multinational pipeline industry and stop line three. And that's what we'll talk about in my breakout group. And I'm also asking that Deb paste in a link that all of you can see and get connected to resources that are far more impressive than what I've got to share today, but resources for how you can get involved and stay involved in this struggle. It's not over yet. One thing I want to say before I end is that this week is a big day, even a big week for this Stop Line 3 campaign. There's going to be a massive action on Wednesday, August 25th, this coming Wednesday. And in solidarity, Madison is having a rally at our state capitol on Tuesday at noon. So if you can come down and support Water Protectors, there'll be a caravan of Water Protectors coming from Milwaukee, joining with Madison area Water Protectors, and we'll be leaving by 1 p.m. from the state capitol, State Street Corner, and heading up to St. Paul, where we'll be met and welcomed by Unity Church Unitarian in St. Paul. They're putting us up for the night and feeding us with a community meal. And then we'll be the next day joining water walkers that have come down from the White Earth Nation. They've marched over 250 miles, and we're going to walk with them for their last mile and a half in St. Paul and have a big action at the state capitol. So whether you can join us on that Tuesday to caravan and spend time in St. Paul beforehand, or whether you come for the day on Wednesday, consider coming to join this huge historic event at the state capitol in St. Paul. And the other projects that you'll hear about, the other two are very compelling too. So if you go to them, I won't be offended. And there's plenty of information that you can get from the link that's been pasted. Thank you for your time, and thanks for all that you do for justice on so many fronts. I love this congregation, and I love the way that you stand up for justice.
Thank you, Tim.
Hi, my name is Tom Boswell. And I'm a leader of the Safe Skies Clean Water Coalition, and I'm proud to say that our coalition really began at James Reeb 2.5 or so years ago, and it's a very important issue because it intersects with so many other important issues that we're facing both locally and nationally. The coalition has two main goals: to force the Air National Guard, the county, the city, and the state to clean up PFAS contamination of our watershed, and first and foremost, to prevent the basing of F-35 jets at Truax Field in Madison. Our community is being sacrificed for an F-35 project that is misguided and immoral in every conceivable way. First, the financial cost of it. The F-35 is the most expensive weapon system in the history of the human race. It will cost taxpayers $1.7 trillion over its lifetime, more than the development of the atom bomb. It costs $44,000 to fly one of these beasts for an hour. The squadron that the Air Force and Senator Tammy Baldwin want to place in Madison will cost taxpayers $2.2 billion. This robs us of resources we desperately need to provide to combat pandemics, the climate crisis, and our crumbling infrastructure, and to provide affordable housing and to rescue our failing education and healthcare systems. Next, it's an environmental justice issue because the negative impacts of the project will disproportionately affect low-income people, people of color, and children, by the Air Force's own admission. The health impacts of noise and contaminated water will fall on low-income communities and communities of color. Children will have more difficulty learning. People will be displaced or forced to live with the noise. And families that once relied on fishing for recreation and subsistence will be denied that opportunity or forced to further risk their health. Next, at a time when our planet is in peril due to the climate crisis, the F-35 could be the next nail in the coffin. The US military is the largest user of fossil fuels in the world, and the F-35 will be a major contributor to that disgraceful distinction. Please change the slides if you can. Each F-35 will spew out 7 tons of carbon dioxide in each hour of flight. Finally, there's the issue of safety, both community and planetary safety. The F-35 is designed to carry the B-61-12 guided nuclear bomb, sometimes called the most dangerous nuclear weapon in the US arsenal because it is the smallest and considered usable by some war planners. It figures prominently in the Defense Department's most recent nuclear posture review. Pierre Spray, who helped design, you can change the slide, please, who helped design the F-16 and A-10 fighter jets, told us that nuclear bombs might not be stored in Madison, but since the F-35 was the vehicle to deploy them, Madison would be a target in the event of nuclear hostilities. In a talk at First Unitarian Society, Spray also told us that because of the composite material the F-35 is made of, as well as its stealth coating, a crash in or near Madison would be worse than a terrorist attack. He said it would take 10 times as much toxic PFAS foam to extinguish the fire, if local fire departments could figure out how to do it at all. Safe Skies Clean Water has spent over 2 years in grassroots organizing, developing relations with local public officials, legal challenges, educating the public, and holding community forums. Now we need to turn our attention to Senator Tammy Baldwin, who is the primary proponent of the F-35 basing and the person with the most power to prevent it. This last slide depicts Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy, Baldwin's counterpart. In Burlington, Vermont, the Air Force had decided to look elsewhere for a place to base its F-35s due to citizen pressure in its own EIS investigation. But Leahy pressured the Air Force to ignore its own experts and cite the planes in South Burlington. We believe Senator Baldwin has the same power to determine the fate of the F-35 and our community. We will discuss this more in the breakout session. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Good morning. I'm Randy Coloni. I am a longtime member of JRUU congregation, although I had lapsed for a long time. Before I talk on my topic, I have to share with you all that I struggled with this brief presentation for a week, and I just realized why last night. In the context of social justice, it feels weird to take a formal part in a worship service where I'm basically trying to sell you on an investment. I'm here to tell you about a piece of land and a dream you can buy into. But the dream has many social justice elements, and this is how we can use our treasures in support of things we believe in. Okay, so on to Voigt Farm. Slide one, please. Save the Farm Project aims to, no, I'm sorry, okay. The Save the Farm Project aims to purchase a 65-acre agricultural property in the middle of our city, just north of Milwaukee Street. I'm driven to pursue this project because I see an opportunity for the community rather than a for-profit developer to own and guide development of a wonderful property with a central location, bus services, a grocery store, and natural areas. Rather than becoming just another cookie cutter subdivision, the property can become a special community asset. Our mission statement should be visible on a slide before you and is in the chat. Because of time constraints, I won't read it. Oops, I turned my camera off here, sorry. Okay. In practical terms, what we propose is three land uses. The first is sustainable infrastructure. This is where we have a real opportunity to develop truly affordable, energy efficient, and carbon neutral housing of widely diverse types to meet the needs of currently marginalized folks. 12 acres along Milwaukee Street will allow development of units ranging from tiny houses, co-op housing, efficiency condos, offering entry-level ownership opportunities, and other non-traditional living arrangements. The second land use is urban agriculture, 20 acres for community gardens, land for low-income startup farm entrepreneurs, food pantry donation plots, possible commercial food product growing and production spaces, teaching plots, etc. The third land use is wetlands and green space preservation, 32 acres, much of it along Starkweather Creek, offering the community natural recreation opportunities such as a bike path, canoe, kayak launch on the creek, wildlife habitat, and hydrologic benefits in having less pavement, filtering the water flowing into Starkweather Creek, and some flood mitigation. On this land, we can use current knowledge and technology to develop a neighborhood for today, environmentally sustainable design, a bike and pedestrian forward layout with reduced pavement, natural surroundings and connection to the land, and collaborations with mission-driven programs to explore things like electric car sharing, community kitchen programs, training experiences in solar installation, home construction, landscaping, time banking, nature and farm experiences for kids, and so on, so much more. In the breakout session, I'll focus on our plans for funding the purchase of the Voigt property and the key role of a proposed investment cooperative. As the slide shows, the proposed structure would involve the co-op, a land trust, and partnerships with mission-driven organizations. Our action in the session, in the breakout session, will basically be to identify specific information you would want as potential investors as we move forward in starting the process of trying to collect investments so that we can tender an offer on the property. More detail will happen in the breakout session. And basically, I guess I would reinforce the fact that the mission of this program is to develop housing opportunities for people who haven't had them, including the development of generational wealth, which has been a key part of how non-marginalized communities have established their wealth and passed it on, whereas people of color have not had that opportunity, having been precluded from purchasing homes. So the breakout session will follow in a little bit. Thank you.